God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
This man must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name's Scott Adams. You're listening to The Scott Adams Show. I'm joined by Leonard Kubota.
Good morning.
I couldn't get that off my tongue right.
I guess you haven't said the name before.
No, I don't know what was happening. I think I was swallowing or something at the same time. But welcome, everybody, to The Scott Adams Show. And we have a lot to talk about today. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Democrat debate. Fireworks for a change.
Fireworks.
Right?
You know, I said to you, I wanted to watch it because I thought it would be interesting with Bloomberg on the stage. But I got it, and it certainly was interesting. But it was a terrible night for Bloomberg. I mean, my God, at least three times he really was unable to answer questions. He was unable to answer questions about stop and frisk. He was unable to answer questions about women who had been worked, who had been employed by his organization, the Bloomberg organization, who had accused him or other members of his staff of sexual harassment. He couldn't handle that question. I mean, there was an awkward moment about his taxes. It went on and on. And you know who came out swinging the minute she came out on the stage? Elizabeth Warren. I mean, when she made the comment about there's a man out there who calls women, we don't want a president who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians, she goes, and I'm not talking about President Donald Trump. She goes, I'm talking about Michael Bloomberg.
That was the tone.
That set the tone of the evening. I mean, he really, you know, his staff really should be fired or something has to happen there. Nobody prepared him for this.
Mm-mm, no. But, you know, he did get some zingers out, too. So Bloomberg
he had a few
reminded
good moments.
Me of something I wasn't sure was going to happen. But he said, I think I'm accurate in saying that I'm the only one that's ever even started a business on this floor.
Well, that's accurate.
And he looked down the line and here it is. You know, no one up there started a business. Yet they're commenting on, you know, their business. They're commenting on business taxes and what's good for business and how businesses should run and who should be rich and who should be poor. And they've never run a business. They've never hired a staff. And in fact, the staff that they have hired, you know, has all been funded and financed by taxpayer dollars. You take Amy Klobuchar, for example. You know, her staff is there because of the fundraising. You know, all the donations that go into their campaigns, and from what I understand, she is a very angry, very disturbed type of person. And we saw that on full display last night when Pete Buttigieg started to question why she didn't know who AMLO was, you know, Lopez Obrador. Right,
the president of Mexico. And, you know, she could have handled that moment so much better.
Again, she looked unhinged.
She looked unhinged. Again, the journalist from Telemundo did phrase the question in a way that was very incendiary.
Well, okay. You could tell that the journalist from Telemundo did not like Amy Klobuchar.
Exactly. So that was quite blatant. So, you know, you got to take it into full context. But she could have said, you know, that was a bad moment for me. She could have made a joke. She could have said, I had a senior moment. She could have said anything. But then what she could have done was then gone into something that shows that she understands our relationship with Mexico, that she understands Mexican policy, something that would have just made her forgetting the name just a momentary lapse. But instead, she became defensive with Pete Buttigieg, and she said, what are you trying to say, Pete, I'm dumb? She's 59 years old. He's in his 30s. Okay, she's a senator. He's a mayor of a small town. You're suddenly unhinged because he's questioned you? Because he happens to be eloquent? I mean, if that's, you know, how little it takes to rattle your cage, how are you going to run the country? That's what everybody's thinking. And did she need Elizabeth Warren to come out after she said Amy's health care plan is a post-it? Did she have to come out then and protect her? It made Elizabeth Warren look good. It made Amy look small.
Well, you know, Pete Buttigieg looks... he is the most programmed, right? I mean, he seems to have, you know, the best deliveries, right? And he's unrattled. He's unfrazzled.
He's got great talking points, but, and very good composure.
But didn't you say Amy Klobuchar has a history? Like, what was it? Something about salad.
There was a story. I want to say it's probably about a year and a half ago, where she chewed out a staffer because she was getting on a plane, and the staffer had purchased her a salad and forgot to get her a fork, so that she demanded that the staffer go and get her comb. Okay, I don't know whose comb it was. I'm assuming it's Amy's comb. And kind of rinsed the comb out, and she was going to eat the salad with a comb. You got to be kidding me. Are you going to tell me you got on a plane and the plane couldn't offer you a plastic fork somewhere?
Well,
and that's disgusting. I mean, but she supposedly has a short fuse.
So here's an article from February 8th. It's from BuzzFeed, you know, liberal magazine, right? And it's entitled "Staffers Documents Show Amy Klobuchar's Wrath Toward Her Aides. It's Hard to Explain the Anxiety That Permeates the Office," a former staffer for the Minnesota Democrat told BuzzFeed News. So apparently there's story after story of how, you know, miserably she treats her staff, and the staff is running around on eggshells, worried about the next tirade that Amy Klobuchar is going to put out there. So Amy Klobuchar did well with Iowa and with New Hampshire. I think that's the end of the road for Amy Klobuchar. She definitely let them see her sweat last night. And no one wants, if you're going to have the first woman as president, the one thing you don't want to see in the character of a person like that is getting frazzled by, you know, some mayor of South Bend that doesn't have any experience whatsoever. I mean, Pete Buttigieg is going to ruffle your feathers to the point.
That's what made it so bad. I mean, honestly, if she, again, she shouldn't have been frazzled at all, but if it had happened by somebody more seasoned, it might have made more sense.
And look at what Donald Trump has gone through. I mean, Donald Trump, time after time, I mean, you know, if it's not his adversaries, it's the people that are supposed to be his allies that are actually leaking and stabbing him in the back and turning on him. I mean, you know, people like, oh, I don't know, John Bolton, you know, writing a book. You know, it's unprecedented, really, or maybe not unprecedented, but rare that you would have a National Security Council or a National Security Advisor person write a book, you know, months after you depart from office.
It's usually several years later.
Exactly.
And usually you're out of the administration at that point when the book comes out.
Yeah, so President Trump has had to deal with so many unprecedented things because he's such an unprecedented character. He's still the outsider. Yesterday, President Trump was in Bakersfield talking about water rights and had Steve Mnuchin and a whole host of other people out there to basically improve the water situation, which he was talking about these what look like droughts, you know, dry grass, then, you know, green foliage, and then dry again. And what he was talking about was that they regulate water so much out there that things are dying, farmers are struggling. So he said he's going to put an end to that, and he signed an executive order to alleviate the problem out there. And he was with Devin Nunes and Jeff Flake and not Jeff Flake, Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
And
how'd you confuse the two of those?
I used to always get those two confused for some reason. And they have a similar look about them. They're both blonde-haired guys. They're both, you know, but, and there for a long time, Kevin McCarthy was never Trumper. You know, he was kind of a backroom, you know, Paul Ryan dude, you know, working his way up the ladder in the House. And, you know, but in any case, and then he went to L.A. from Bakersfield. He went to L.A. and he was talking with the Olympic Committee, where they all praised him and thanked him for getting the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles, which was a big deal. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's the third time that California's gotten the Olympics.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a huge windfall. Now, there's a little twist to this L.A. thing, because with the idea that you get the Olympics into L.A. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, L.A. is preventing you from sending in your ICE enforcement team to try to clean up the cities, whether it be San Francisco, who's fighting them tooth and nail over their sanctuary status and not letting ICE do their job. Mm-hmm. But now with the federal commissions that are associated with the Olympics, there's a paramount reason why it is that we need to clean the feces off the street, get the syringes, you know, out of the way, and a whole host of other things. We're going to go ahead and skip through that. And, you know, so, you know, it gives Trump a bit of a green light to actually get himself, to get the federal government into California sanctuaries, which could actually, you know, go a long way in straightening up a lot of the election fraud. See, every time they mention, you know, sanctuary cities, I'm not thinking anymore. Well, I mean, I do think of Kate Steinle, but I mean, I'm not thinking anymore about, you know, the criminal aspect of it. I'm thinking of the election fraud aspect of it, because I've, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, I feel like I've learned that what they're doing with these human identities is they're stealing them. And I've been learning more and more about this. And it's all about enforcing the drug distribution channels. It's enforcing the drug crimes and the human trafficking crimes. But it's also about getting these head counts up to get more representation. Because when you juxtapose that, or you actually look at all the different surrounding factors, the citizenship question comes to mind.
Yes.
Why were they so adamant about fighting the citizenship question at the same time that they're promoting adamantly the sanctuary cities, which on its face doesn't make any sense, because you're treating one group of people differently than you would another, and more favorably than another. And that more favorable group isn't even a citizen, and they're getting free stuff from taxpayers who are citizens and playing by all the rules. So there's so many flaws in it. And anytime you take a look at this stuff and you see all these different flaws and you realize that the people you're up against are winning some of these arguments, it means that, A, they're not stupid. They know what they're doing, and they're doing it for sinister reasons. When you take a look at the history of California, for example, and you look at the Getty and Pelosi and D'Alessandra, her family, or her maiden family.
Right. Newsom.
And then Newsom. Newsom and the Gettys were, you know, married together.
It's dynasties. It's California and dynasties.
And even how long it's been since Feinstein took office, or Maxine Waters, who doesn't even live in her own district, and how rich they've become. You know, so there's just so much going on there. And, of course, the corruption from Adam Schiff. And you take a look at the impeachment group. They're all from New York and L.A. pretty much. Seven mm-hmm. out of the ten in the legal team going to impeach the president and get rid of the president. Mm-hmm. Going as far as that. They were all from New York and California. So the idea there is that these are the two states that are the worst offenders of the sanctuary and of getting illegals IDs so that they could vote illegally. Now, you know, again, that becomes a big concern because 15, 16, 17 states now are pushing this whole, and they're all liberal states, and they're pushing this whole popular vote thing, meaning that even if you win the state of Virginia or Minnesota or New Mexico or Colorado, states or New Jersey, the states that Trump can actually win and flip, the ones he lost that he can win now, those states are starting to say, well, you can't get our electorates unless you win the popular vote. But again, on the flip side of that, as I said last week, the idea would be that I think that Trump is going to get the popular vote. But the only way he can get the popular vote is if he can get out the fraud, cut the fraud out. And by going into California and New York City and cracking down with ICE and throwing out these illegal voters and doing what he's doing in Wisconsin and Georgia and everywhere else in between, Florida, they got E-Verify. But with Georgia and Wisconsin, the recent articles we reported on this show were that they were sending out hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of notes to people they suspected were either there illegally or moving or shouldn't be registered to vote and a whole host of different reasons. And of course, it turned out that these mailboxes were non-responsive. They were fake mailboxes, fake addresses, non-response, return to sender kind of deal, where these people weren't even living there. And you got more people. You got 120% enrollment on the, you know, registration for election registration, and you can't have that, right? Yeah. And so they pulled off in Wisconsin something like 350,000 people, and in Georgia it was like 275,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
It added up to about 600,000. Now keep in mind, I mean, Hillary Clinton won by about 3-4 million. Popular vote, they all came from California. So if you could just fix that, now those states, the 15 states, the 15 liberal states, whether it's California, New York, or whatever, that decided they're going to go ahead and award their electorates to the popular vote winner. Well, if Trump wins the popular vote, he wins all 15 liberal states that he probably wouldn't be even been able to flip in the first place.
There's the irony. Be careful what you wish for.
So that's pretty great stuff. Now, today also is a big day for Roger Stone. And that comes in the wake of all these different pardons, you know, with Blagojevich and Bernie Kerik and even Michael Milken. And
There were 11 pardons. I mean, it's...
Well, and commutations.
And commutations. No, I think this is a, you know, a very...
How about Blagojevich?
Blagojevich. That was a great moment, his press conference, because, you know, you hadn't seen him, obviously, out in the media since around 2009. And when he came out and spoke so eloquently about his experience, about how his reflection, and, you know, he talked about criminal justice reform, and he was very gracious. He must have said it four times, that he thanked President Donald Trump and said he did not have to do this. He says, I was a Democrat governor. He's a Republican president. This does not benefit him in any way. I thought it was a great moment for him. And you kind of think he's going to be on the stump speech. But I do want to comment on one other thing related to the pardons. A lot of people are already complaining about Trump's pardons. Donald Trump Jr. sent out a tweet, which you retweeted, Scott, on your Twitter feed, about in which he said, Dems are mad at Trump for abusing his pardon power. Total presidential pardon sentence computations. I'm going to read them off for the last group of presidents. Carter had 566. Reagan had 406. George Herbert Walker Bush had 77. Cigar Bill, okay, I guess Bill Clinton, had 459. George W. Bush had 200. Obama had a whopping 1,927. And President Donald J. Trump only had 26. So let's all put it into context.
Obama had four times the average number.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I mean, Obama had almost 10 times Trump. I mean, 100 times Trump, excuse me. I mean, that is, it's crazy. I mean, this is, again, the fake media getting everything distorted. But I think those moments are important because they show that he's reflective, he being President Trump, about about the sentence versus the crime, and he's also reflective of, you know, the individuals. And who's thinking about Mike Milken these days? I mean, that, you know, but he's turned his life around, and the fact that he's now getting that pardon, even though he's been physically out of prison for a very, very long time, it means something. It clears your slate in a way. It's good for your conscience.
So, you know, some people are talking about pardoning Roger Stone before Amy Berman Jackson drops the hammer. Amy Berman Jackson's just the biggest scumbag on the planet, really. She's a dirty, rotten scoundrel judge. Can't stand this woman. Never did like her. And this is before Bernie Sanders. I mean, not Bernie. I'm reading Bernie. Bernie Sanders is in my Roger Stone. This is before Roger Stone, right? And by the way, that was a good line last night in the Democrat debate when they said, when Pete Buttigieg said, you know, it would be nice to have some people that were Democrats that were actually running as president.
He had a couple of funny moments.
Yeah, because Bloomberg's a Republican.
Bloomberg was he was a Republican and became a Democrat, yeah. and Bernie is had been an independent.
And Bernie's an independent, right? So it's kind of funny, but yeah. So the debate really on this Roger Stone issue is Tucker Carlson seems to think that there's no doubt it's going to be a pardon. Okay. Yeah. And then the question is, should Trump pardon Roger Stone before he ever gets sentenced?
Yeah.
Because if he does that, she can no longer. And I had a thought that went even one further, because I cannot stand this Amy Berman Jackson so much. I think she's just a fraud. I think she's a liberal hack. And we should never have liberal hacks on the bench as a judge at such a high court. Mm-hmm. No court, but such a high court, right? There should never be bias like that. It's such an easy job to do, to be fair, you know? And that's all the conservatives and all the Trump supporters really want. But, you know, the thing is, I'm saying this. I'm saying that Trump ought to shadow this person, right? Every time Amy Berman Jackson makes a ruling, if you can't get rid of her and impeach her because she overlooked a rigged jury and Tamika Hart, and she squashed Roger Stone's ability to speak even after the conviction and before the sentencing, so he can't do what he does for a living, and that's speak as a pundit. Well, then I say you shadow Amy Berman Jackson and make her annoy the heck out of her.
Well, when you look at the disparate justice.
And so basically, it doesn't matter. Whatever ruling Amy Berman Jackson does, the president's going to pardon.
Right. Well, when you look at the justice, you know, that she's thrown out for, you know, obviously we're talking about Roger Stone right now, but Paul Manafort, you know, she was the judge in that case too. Yet when she had Hillary Clinton and the email case, you know, it was a totally different story. She tossed out the wrongful death lawsuit against Hillary Clinton by the parents of two Americans who were killed in the terror attack at the compound in Benghazi, Libya. So, I mean, again, this is yet another case of two systems of justice.
So, Terry, one of our listeners chimed in and texted me this information. We were going to actually go to this. See, the Blagojevich pardon is very interesting. I'm telling you, the Blagojevich, because you get the idea that this guy's going to probably be Obama's worst nightmare.
Oh, he's definitely going to be Obama's. And you know what I kind of think about this, Scott? I've been reflecting on this a little bit. I have a funny feeling that part of the reason why he went down at the time was he knew something about Obama. Well, and they made him the scapegoat.
Tom Fitton was talking about this this redacted 302.
Yeah.
You know that, right? There's an FBI 302.
Why don't you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, there's an FBI 302. And I actually was able to read, you know, what was redacted and what wasn't. And it clearly says that Obama was in on this from the start and that he wanted Valerie Jarrett to take over that Senate seat.
Yeah.
And for some reason that didn't happen. I just skimmed over that yesterday. And now for the first time, I'm taking a look at what Terry sent. Okay. So Terry sent something and it says, will Blagojevich turn state's evidence? Is this why President Trump pardoned Blagojevich? Blagojevich said, you know, that basically he learned from news reports.
Yeah.
that this was happening.
Yeah.
And that the news reports came from President Trump in making the announcement on a tarmac. Mm-hmm. And that President Trump said, I've only spoken with him a few times. I barely know the guy. He was on The Apprentice at one point. Blagojevich was, you know, a caricature, right? But he's more Trump and he's more Roger Stone than, you know, than he is a normal politician.
Yes.
And he's a Democrat. And here's the thing about that, too.
Yeah.
His whole thing, his whole speech, mm-hmm. right? His whole speech, which was an amazingly eloquent speech.
Oh, yeah.
Aside from the fact that he was bleeding to death.
That was almost human, too, because he was bleeding because he cut himself shaving. He hasn't shaved himself in a normal way in 8 years.
Yeah, okay, but get a cold cloth. Get a couple of those little things that burn a little
and
bit.
And he kept talking about it.
And make an announcement. Okay, the conference is going to be on hold for 10 minutes. I got a shaving cut. I got to fix it. But the guy had blood all over his face, man. Not just on his chin, but on his upper lip and all.
Oh my God.
Now, it was kind of an endearing thing, though. He was like, well, I've been locked up for 8 years and I wasn't used to this kind of shape, you know, a real shaving
razor,
experience.
Yeah.
Which was interesting in and of itself, but he was so elegant. I mean, I'm like, God, this guy's like a poet, right?
And I loved how he talked about his daughters. I really like that.
Yeah. And what he talked about was prison reform, criminal justice reform, sentencing reform, and he talked about how black people have been, unduly targeted. Trump has actually addressed this more than any Democrat president mm-hmm. that I know, mm-hmm. and Van Jones is even on board with what Trump has done with Jared Kushner mm-hmm. Related to this, and this is why Kanye West and Kim Kardashian support Trump. This is why it is that Alice Johnson's probably going to be a spokesperson at the RNC. You know, Alice Johnson, who was over-sentenced for her drug pusher.
Yeah, that was
something like that.
Yeah.
And, well, she 22 years, you know. I mean, that's crazy. That's a long
crazy.
Time.
And it was a first time offense.
Yeah. So there's that, and then you have even the pardon, the postpartum pardon of Jack Johnson, the great boxer from the 20s who married a white woman mm-hmm. and was basically too big for his britches, and they tried to take him down a notch. Jack Johnson, look him up. It's a kind of an interesting story. The boxing community tried and pushed for that pardon, postpartum. You know, the guy's been dead for...
Right. Postmortem is what
post-mortem.
You're looking at.
Postmortem. I know. I'm sorry.
Postpartum is what happens after you've had a baby.
Yeah. You're so right. I'm so dumb. No, but that's right. All right. Postmortem.
I was wondering.
No.
But you know what? Still, that
you're the one with the master's in literature.
But you know what? That's still, even if the person in question is deceased, it still means something to the children or the relatives of the individual in question. So it is not without significance.
And I would even add history.
Yeah,
because this was way back in the 20s, and this was when black people truly were treated horribly, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, back to what Terry was talking about. So will Blagojevich turn state's evidence? Is this why President Trump pardoned Blagojevich? Because it was Obama that set the whole plan up. Now, see, that's what I was saying. I'm just reading this for the first time.
Yeah.
But I was adding my own two cents with what I've learned and what I've been talking about this subject. So let's see if this jives with what I was just saying. So it says Obama may have lied about conversations with convicted fraudster Tony Retzko. See, this Tony Retzko guy is a bad character and good buddies with Barack Hussein. Obama may have overtly recommended Valerie Jarrett. See, there it is.
Yeah.
For his Senate seat. A supporter of President Obama may have offered quid pro quo on a Jarrett Senate appointment. Obama maintained a list of good Senate candidates. Rahm Emanuel allegedly floated Sheryl Jackson's name for the Senate seat. I don't know who Sheryl Jackson is. Okay. Obama had a secret phone call with Blagojevich. Redacted portion, President-elect Obama also spoke to Governor Blagojevich on December 1st, 2008 in Philadelphia on Harris' cell phone call. Okay. 139, John Harris and Governor's legal counsel discuss a conversation Blagojevich had with President-elect Obama. The government claims a conspiracy existed from October 22, 2008, continuing through December 9, 2008. That conversation is relevant to the defense of the government's theory of an ongoing conspiracy. Only Rod Blagojevich and President Obama can testify to the contents of that conversation. The defense is allowed to present evidence that corroborates the defendant's testimony. Okay, and then here's the this article, by the way, is the article I posted up on my Facebook, my Twitter yesterday. And this was a Twitter thread, actually, from Rosie Memos. It was very good. And it says, Obama may have lied about conversations with convicted fraudster. Right. Yeah, I'm very, very much aware of this, and I want to thank Terry for sending it in. This was also related to Chicago 5. There's a lot of information here, but Tom Fitton is on this. He's gotten some FOIA requests to some sealed documents. Of course, the president can see the sealed documents that President Obama squashed, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of this stuff that was squashed by President Obama. I believe Trump already knows the contents of the squashed information, right? And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's, you know, if it's if it wasn't, I mean, this is just Chicago. Now we got Julian Assange talking, and there's some information we're going to share with you all about that. It involves Dana Rohrabacher. Dana Rohrabacher was supposed to have been ordered by President Trump to tell Julian Assange to you know, do the cover up. The only problem is, before Dana ever met with Julian Assange, he pretty much made it crystal clear that the Russians weren't responsible for the hacking, and that he made it very clear with Dutch television that Seth Rich was a source leaking information and got shot in the back and killed. And Donna Brazile is still running free because she was, by many accounts and by strong accounts, she, along with the mayor of, it was either the mayor or the police chief of D.C., I think it was the mayor, were mysteriously at the emergency room when Seth Rich was there. And yet they covered this whole investigation up. You don't even know the ballistics tests or anything. So Donna Brazile, who lied about getting the questions in advance, actually wrote a piece in the Atlantic publication, the magazine, a great magazine, right? She gets to write an article saying Trump will cheat. That's like the pot calling the kettle black on steroids.
Exactly.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, this is a woman that literally cheats, and she was busted.
And she was
but
helping
because we
cheat.
Have this fake news press, nobody wants to even talk about that. I mean, it's so obvious that Donna Brazile is not the person to be the voice for that conversation, because she is such a corrupt, lying scoundrel, right? I mean, she got the questions in advance. There was a day in our history, there's a day in our country where getting the questions to a debate in advance would disqualify you as a candidate. And it did neither.
Yeah.
She got away with it. They turned a blind eye to it.
Since she got away with it, they turned a blind eye to it, and now she's a pundit. I mean, you know, apparently there's another life.
But just looking at Chicago alone, I mean, people forget Jussie Smollett now is going to court. The two Nigerian guys are going to be in court testifying. And the fact is that, once again, this involves, you know, basically Kim Fox, who is great friends with Kamala Harris, right? Kamala Harris was her mentor. And then you got Tina Chen, Kim Fox's boss, in a sense, the hierarchy, the chief of staff for Michelle Obama, gets called in. She's considered the big gun. And she's childhood friends with Rahm Emanuel's wife, who's Rahm Emanuel, if you forgot, is the was the mayor at the time of this thing that went down. So you got this police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, that resigned in disgrace because he kept falling asleep on the job, sleeping in his car all day. Yeah. It's kind of crazy, you know. But so you got Eddie Johnson, who basically didn't show up, didn't have the Fraternal Order of Police's back, did show up when the President Trump went out to Chicago to support the police. The superintendent decided to stand down because he's just such a loser, right? Yeah. He's such an Obama guy. So this Jussie Smollett thing is going to blow up in the Obamas' faces because there's a connection from Tina Chen, Hollywood, and a sexual harassment group called Time's Up that probably does the opposite of what it's supposed to do, as it usually does when people are involved with these types of things. They're usually... you know, usually it's the pedophiles that start the Child Foundation, right?
There's something about that. You know, it's interesting. Just go for a moment as you're talking about Chicago politics, talking about Blagojevich one more time. The judge that sentenced him to the 14-year sentence, U.S. District Judge James Zagel, also was the same one who sentenced mob informant Nick Calabrese to 12 years in prison, okay, in 2009. Calabrese helped take down the Chicago mob, but he also killed 14 people. So this same judge sentenced somebody who was overheard on a tape talking about selling Obama's seat to two more years than somebody who killed 14 people.
Wow.
I mean, this, again... Illinois politics.
Fitzpatrick?
Yeah. Who was attorney?
FBI Fitzpatrick, yeah. Comey, and Mueller.
Yeah.
We're all involved with this thing.
Exactly.
Now, they're ruthless people, and Trump knows it. And he's going to get to the bottom of this. And, you know, I just say this. This whole thing, a lot of people are upset about McCabe. And Paul Sperry's been going around, you know, really tweeting up a lot of different things, saying, you know, that Durham hasn't gotten to the bottom, hasn't interviewed Carter Page, hasn't interviewed McCabe or Comey. And I think my answer to that is a lot of the content, a lot of the testimony it's already on paper.
Yeah.
So they're never going to lie. They're going to have great attorneys. Mm-hmm. They're going to say exactly what they said in a committee. So why even bother tipping them off that you're even looking at them? Why not just go about your case? I mean, I think that there's something to be made there. That they already pretty much know what the answer is. Now, a lot of their answers already are lies. So their answers don't jive with the documents that have been obtained. So why give them another bite at the apple to spin or embellish or to twist the meaning of a word, knowing now what they didn't know then, or they knowing now, you know, that Durham's team has the goods on something and that they need to kind of talk their way out of the paper bag. So why not just take their words from the committee hearings and juxtapose them with the facts of the email transfers and the 302s and whatever else and leave it at that. I don't think that you need more. You don't need to give them another chance to spin their way out of the bottle. So there's that. But getting to Chicago, I think that there is going to be something more about Blagojevich. And I think it's going to directly... Now the question is, if Obama's more guilty than Blagojevich, okay.
Yeah.
Let's call him Obamovich. No. Then does Obama get 14 years like Blagojevich did?
Of course not. So you of course he's not going to get 14 years. He's not going to get 10
minutes.
Shouldn't
McCabe get the stone treatment?
Yeah.
You know, this two levels of, you know, justice is ruining our country. And, you know, we're seeing it all over the place, and it's always involving liberals, by the way.
Yeah.
It's always involving liberals. Liberals that tell us that we need climate change, but then they buy the house on Martha's Vineyard or fly in the private jet. You know, what's good for you is not necessarily good for them. Mm-hmm. And that's two levels of justice. Varsity Blues, right? Where they have the secret path to success.
Yeah.
That's an easier lane. It's the easy pass lane, mm-hmm. right? It's the it's the you know, the fast lane, yeah, right? So they get the easy lane in life. They just buy their way through it, right? And, you know, they try to say that the Republican Party is the party of corporate elites. No, they are the ones with the 20 billionaires
yeah
that are donating to campaigns. It's not the Republicans. The Republicans don't even have the Koch brothers anymore.
That's very true. I mean, the Koch brothers are actually the Koch brother, you know, spreads their wealth among both parties.
Well, and they hate Trump.
And they, well,
you know, they hate the Koch brothers hate Trump, right? But they have the Soros, you know, yeah, family, yeah, right? And so, you know, I don't know. It seems to be like they're talking out of both sides of their mouth almost on every topic, whether it's Me Too, you know, with Harvey Weinstein as the liberal Clinton friend, or Backpage, where the owners of that sex trafficking ring donated to the Clintons, whether it's NXIVM and the Bronfman family and Wexner and Jeffrey Epstein, all liberals, right? Then you got Jussie Smollett, the victim of a hate crime related to MAGA country,
yeah,
another liberal, yeah, you know, all these hoaxsters and the violence. It's the Bernie Sanders supporters that are the violent ones.
Absolutely.
It's not what Nancy Pelosi says, where she goes to a Tea Party rally and she was fearing for her life when all they did was cleaned up after themselves and wave flags with their children.
Well, I think we should mention some good news. Mm-hmm. So President Trump announced on Wednesday that Richard Grenell, the U.S. ambassador to Germany, who he interviewed a few years ago, will become acting director of national intelligence. And you know, what's interesting is he is the first openly gay cabinet member in history. So I think that, you know, that is really a significant move. And the reason why this happened was Joseph McGuire, who he's replacing, was also another acting. He was required by law to leave the post of acting director of national intelligence within weeks. So there was a timing about this. So the fact that he's acting, I don't know if that means that that's going to be the permanent, be a temporary situation, and he may become the eventual cabinet leader, or if it's just going to be, or he's just going to be in a temporary position. But it's still a big moment for the country and for Rick Grenell, who's done a very good job as the ambassador to Germany.
Do you remember our Rick Grenell story?
Yes,
where,
it was very funny.
I saw him on a morning show, Fox and Friends or whatever. It was the morning of the Supreme Court justice decision on gay marriage.
Yeah.
And Justice Kennedy came out with this whole thing about constellation of benefits. And I thought, wow, that's such a perplexing topic, because the constellation of benefits is exactly what was used as the, you know, incentive for family building in our country and building families and growing the community and increasing our population as we need it. But also families that have stake in their land and have a reason and a purpose to be good citizens, and also the whole centerpiece of a community, which is like church and Christian values and child rearing. And so the constellation of benefits associated with that. Now, if you take that and you give it to any group,
yeah,
whether it be, you know, two guys marrying, two girls marrying, two whatever marrying, two puppies marrying, it doesn't matter. At some point, where does it end? And if everybody gets the constellation of benefits, then the problem I was seeing with it was that the only person that's being sort of like oppressed is the person that can't find love or chooses not to get married. They don't get any constellation of benefits.
And also, you know, the people that are same-sex partners, if they are not common law partners, they can't share benefits. You know, they're illegally share benefits.
Right. And how about those people that come back, you know, mangled from war or have various diseases,
yeah,
that make them ineligible for having a vibrant social life. And so they become more like victims. And, you know, here's the thing.
I'm sorry, I said same-sex. I meant heterosexual couples that are not married.
Well, Rick Grenell came out with a lot of different things because he was openly gay. And I got this article right here where it says, another promise made, promise kept. Back in 2000, Donald Trump said he would appoint gays in a Trump administration. On Wednesday, he announced Ambassador Grinnell as DNI. So I saw what Rick Grinnell was saying, and I thought it's an interesting twist for a Republican voice to say what he was saying, which you supported that decision. I said, is there a possibility we can get Rick Grinnell on?
And it was funny because
he was going to be on O'Reilly.
Yeah, it was funny because this was in our early days of doing the show, and I just managed to find his email address, and I got him. I was, you know, so you hear, you think these people all have handlers and everything else, but I got a hold of him himself, and he said,
Did he pick up when you called him?
No, I didn't call him. I emailed him.
Yeah.
And he got back to me pretty quickly, and he said, yeah, I can do it. He goes, and then he said something about, I'm going to be on O'Reilly.
So I'm in the makeup chair
right
now.
So, you know, I can do it while I'm in the makeup chair.
He was in the makeup chair when he got a hold of me.
Yeah, when I got a hold of him. But he did do it, and he was very good.
Yeah, and that told me also that O'Reilly wasn't always live. It was a pre-record. He was doing that.
It was a Friday. So most of the time on Fridays, they are not live. They are pre-records.
Yeah. So he was,
I know that from a lot of my friends that do a lot of interviews.
O'Reilly was at 8 o'clock, I believe, and he was. We were talking to him around 2 p.m.
Right, so he was. They were recording at about 5.
He was in the makeup chair, and then we had him on. It was a great interview. He was a really nice guy. He's done a great job in Germany. And he just got into a major league war with one of these globalist elites.
Yeah.
I know I won't be able to find it because it was from like about last week. That's about 180 tweets ago, right?
Yeah.
But it was awesome. And so he's really ruffled the feathers of the German elitists, right? And now he's come to DNI. And a lot of people, including Sundance over at Last Refuge, who, by the way, wrote a really interesting piece. If you get a chance to go over to the Conservative Treehouse and read the post article that he wrote up about his dog he lost. It was touching, actually. So, you know, these people have real lives and, you know, then to do these things. But it says here, a possible inflection point, ODNI, Rick Grinnell. President Trump appointed Rick Grinnell to the office of Director of National Intelligence, and the surprise appointment begins immediately. Now, keep in mind, he was an advisor to, he starts today, by the way.
Right.
He was an advisor to Mitt Romney.
Right.
And he left that camp because he was not happy with Mitt Romney.
And he advised, I think, 4 different UN ambassadors. So he has had a very significant career. I mean, he's a relatively young individual, but he's had a very significant career. I think he's going to do very well in this role. And, you know, and again, it's indicative of Donald Trump's ability to put people in positions that wouldn't ordinarily be what you would think on the dotted line.
Right. It says here, within minutes, the media intelligence apparatus displayed apoplexy. Okay. Apoplectic. What is that?
Well, you hear it all the time. Right.
Apoplectic.
They go crazy.
Yeah. But I've never seen it written like that.
That's a noun. The other is an adjective.
Okay. Thank you. Of apoplexy at the announcement. Okay. All of the right administrative state interests are visibly triggered by the appointment. And I could see why. I mean, because this guy loves Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of interesting. Not to mention the fact that the LGBTQ community hates Trump. And I'm like, okay, and anytime I see, you know, like the resist movement with the little blue wave in their Twitter and the little, you know, rainbow flag, all I got to say is, look, President Trump was the first president to reference the LGBTQ in an inaugural speech. Okay, let's not stop there. Also, in a UN General Assembly speech.
Right.
And he's led the world on cracking down on countries pushing them to decriminalize, developing countries to decriminalize homosexuality.
Yeah.
No other president's ever done that.
Yeah.
Then he's the first president to ever mention it in a State of the Union address.
Yeah.
I think he did it in his first one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the LGBTQ community ought to be happy that here's the president, President Trump, that for the
This is the first cabinet, openly gay cabinet leader, cabinet official in history. openly gay.
Yeah, I find that a little surprising.
No, well, yeah, openly gay. Now, there may be people that, you know, but that's the statistic.
Yep. That's what I read, too. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised to hear that, actually. But it does not seem accidental. The appointment of Rick Grenell as acting DNI comes after AG Bill Barr publicly displayed his weakness in managing the DOJ and FBI. When the U.S. Attorney General chooses to complain about POTUS tweets, making it impossible to do his job via public statements, the underlying message is an AG unwilling to do his job. And that's what's concerning, is Barr, you know, when you look at the statistics, you got to look, okay, where are the convictions? Mm-hmm. There's been really no accountability for, you know, a lot of this stuff. Let's just hope that Durham is doing his job. But to get a DNI in there, you know, because we had Coates.
Yeah.
And the DNI really does overlook a lot of this National Security Council BS.
Yeah.
And we're going to start looking into other bigger issues like Michael Atkinson, the ICIG, the Intel Communities Inspector General. So there's a lot of things that need to be straightened out. And DNI is perhaps the most important part of the intelligence community glue. It's the glue. He's the liaison that pretty much controls and oversees all 17 intelligence community agencies, but mainly NSA, which is a military apparatus that's connected with the Pentagon, the CIA, which is directly connected with the State Department, and the FBI, which is directly connected under the Department of Justice. And so those three big conglomerate investigative and intelligence apparatuses need a place to go. And Rick Grenell is the guy to do it.
Absolutely.
And he's perhaps the most qualified as well. So there's a lot going on today. You know, we just learned that Roger Stone was walking into court. He's dressed in black with funky shades. I don't know what's going to happen. I think that the sentencing is likely going to happen. Again, will Trump issue a pardon before the sentencing or before the sentencing is signed? That would be interesting. But I don't think there's any question that if Roger Stone is sentenced, there will be a pardon. I don't think Roger Stone will last too long in jail.
I don't think so either.
I think Donald Trump knows that.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything wrong, really. I mean, he you know,
the punishment needs to fit the crime, and we've been talking about that.
Yeah,
so.
And even Credco, the guy that was responsible for Credco, suggested no jail time. So that those all should be factored in. One last thing before we go. Amy Berman Jackson, though, yesterday read a whole bunch of favorable letters about her from libtards out there, and it was self-serving, self-grandizing, and didn't address the crooked jury.
So, interesting.
Hey, that brings us to the end of our show. My name is Scott Adams.
My name is Leonora Cravetta.
We'll see you next time on the radio. Bye-bye, everybody.
I'm from a small town in Tennessee, a long way from the suits in D.C., but close enough now to see this mess.